welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you broadcasts from radio's golden era. Mark Levin, you're your host for this hour of adventure. Later on, it's Escape from 1954, but first a broadcast of The Chase called King Dano, this NBC episode from April 19th, 1953.
National Broadcasting Company invites you by transcription to join The Chase. There is always the hunter and the hunted, the pursuer and the pursued. It may be the voice of authority or a race with death and destruction, the most relentless of the hunters. There are times when laughter is heard as counterpoint and moments when sheer terror is the theme. Always there is the chase.
Welcome to Monte Carlo, sir. Are you looking for a guide? I know the principality well, sir, and for a small gratuity, I'll be happy to put my services at your disposal. The Prince's Palace? Why, of course, sir, a tour could be arranged. But visiting hours are from 2 to 5, and we have 30 minutes or so to wait. So let's sit here at this small cafe, with the warm sun in our faces and the good spring breeze in our lungs, and watch the passing parade. You ask if I'm British, sir? I know, although I was educated at Eton and Oxford. You see, actually, I'm a citizen of... Well, the name doesn't matter. Suffice to say, the kingdom is a small one. Did I say kingdom? Well, it's not a monarchy anymore. It was acquired, so to speak, by certain foreign interests some time ago, during the reign of His Royal Highness King Dano III.
Your Majesty. Sire.
Huh?
It's time to awake.
Oh. It's you, Jerrick. You interrupted a fascinating dream.
I beg your pardon, sir.
A most magnificent dream, Jerrick. The ballet dancers.
My abject apologies, sire.
Think nothing of it, Jerrick, my friend. What day is it?
Tuesday.
The time?
11:12, Your Majesty.
And the weather?
Cloudy, I'm afraid.
Too bad. What shall I wear today, Jerrick?
I was thinking of the grey pinstripe, sire. The suit you acquired on your visit to the United States.
An excellent suggestion. And the accessories?
A blue figured tie would be attractive. It goes well with grey.
Jerrick, you're a genius.
Thank you, sire.
You're absolutely the most brilliant valet a king could have. And your English is always superb. I wish all my subjects were as quick with languages as you are.
When you issued orders that English was to be the language spoken in the palace after your return from Oxford, Your Majesty, I hastened to please you as best I could.
And you've done well, Jerrick. Our own language is so archaic, so difficult to learn. We need a change in language. And I've always favored English over French.
Sire, I must remind you
and
that
I think
you have
even newer innovations for my people, Jerrick. Our educational processes are out of date. They must learn more about economics, for instance, and the principles of a democratic way of life.
Of course, Your Majesty. But please, sire, I must remind you that you have an appointment.
And when they've learned those principles well, Jerrick... Well, did you say something about an appointment?
General Cranick will be here at noon, sire.
Oh, Cranick.
He telephoned to the palace this morning, sire. He said it was most urgent.
Urgent, eh? What does he want? Another decoration? He's got so many on his chest right now, he can hardly walk.
The general told me to tell you, sire, that his visit is in the nature of an emergency, and he demanded that you be ready to receive him on time.
He demanded, did you say?
He did, sire.
Rather cheeky of him, wasn't it?
It was, sire.
You'd better be careful.
Your Majesty, may I suggest that you hurry? There isn't much time.
All right, Jake, let's get on with it. We'll see why Cranick is so impatient. General Cranick, my dear sir, was commander-in-chief of the army. But how he reached that eminent position, heaven only knows. It was my father, Dano II, who gave him his commission as a colonel.
and by one intrigue or another, Cranick managed to push himself to the top. He was ambitious, I knew that very well, but I never realized how high a goal this opportunist had set for himself until I granted his interview in the throne room that day at noon.
Come in, General. Come in.
Lesto pavis, among me.
If you don't mind, I prefer to speak English inside the palace, General. It's part of my campaign to educate the people.
As you wish, Your Majesty. Although I am afraid that campaign will be a short-lived one.
What do you mean?
The situation is actually very grave.
What situation?
Yours, Dano.
What did you call me?
Your name is Dano, is it not?
Only royalty is permitted to address me so familiarly, General. You know that very well.
Oh, let us stop behaving as if we were comic opera figures, Dano. The show is over.
What are you getting at, Cranick? Speak up.
Very well. At midnight, last night, while the royal head was asleep on the royal pillow, I surrendered the royal army to our friends behind the Iron Curtain.
You what?
There was nothing left to do, sire. We are completely surrounded, as you know. If they attacked, we would not have a chance. Besides, they are our friends. They merely want to help us re-educate the people.
Re-educate them? Enslave them, you mean? No. No, Cranick, you can't do this. I still outrank you here, and I will countermand the order.
It is too late. Our soldiers have already surrendered their arms. Even now, the opposition is marching through the capital. And the officer's corps is with me.
You must have planned long in advance, Cranick.
It took time.
And your fee for turning traitor to your country?
I don't like that word.
It's true, isn't it?
What about you? Where have you been all the while? You might have stopped me, but you were too interested in traveling about the world.
Yes, that may be so. I've been away much more than I've been at home. But I wanted to learn new methods, modern ideas, better ways to improve the lot of our people.
I assure you that I will do my utmost to carry on that noble idea, Your Majesty.
You?
Oh, I neglected to mention that our new friends and allies have appointed me Prime Minister.
I see.
It was inevitable.
Very well. It was inevitable, as you say. How much time do I have to leave?
But you are not leaving, Dano.
I'm not.
It doesn't serve our interests to have you wandering about in the West. It might create sympathy for you and annoyance for us in many ways.
Then what do you propose I do? Are you going to have me assassinated?
That, too, would cause an unfavorable reaction. No, we have decided on another course. Suicide.
Suicide?
Yes.
You must be insane to propose a preposterous idea like that.
But I'm sure you will agree to carry out our suggestion.
I'll agree to nothing of the kind. Oh, no, Cranick. If you're going to kill me, you'll have to do it yourself. And face a revolution. I happen to be popular with my people.
Very popular, Dano. That is why suicide is such an excellent method. They will think of you as having gone insane, and you will soon be forgotten. You have your choice, Dano. Either you do as we say, or you face an uncomfortable week or two with several very persuasive people.
You mean you'd try torture?
An ugly word and a bit of an understatement, too.
I don't doubt it.
Well?
You leave me very little choice.
You are lucky. It was only because of me that you were granted so easy a way out.
I owe you my unending gratitude.
Then we are in agreement. You will remove yourself, as it were, with your own hand.
When?
Now.
He unstrapped his gun holster and took out his service revolver. With a polite bow, he handed the gun to me. For a moment, as I felt the barrel, I had an impulse. An impulse to pull the trigger and blast his grinning face. But he seemed to read my thoughts
for his smile didn't falter as he said,
I wouldn't if I were you.
No?
No. First of all, it would do you no good. There are many others who can take my place. And secondly, it would give our new government the opportunity to put you on trial for the murder of your most trusted officer. Then they would be able to hang you with the sympathy of the people.
You have it all worked out, I see.
To the last detail.
May I have 5 minutes?
Why prolong the agony?
You might at least leave a man alone for a short time before he's about to die.
Well, incidentally, there is only one bullet in that gun chamber. Make certain your aim is good. I would shoot through the roof of the mouth. It is neater.
Thank you for the suggestion.
You have 5 minutes. No more. Lock the door to this throne room before you fire the shot.
Lock the door? Why?
The natural impulse of the suicide to avoid interruption. When I hear the report of the gun, I will try to enter the room. But the door will be barred. I will then call an emergency squad and force my way in.
Your thoroughness is overwhelming, Krennic.
It has always been one of my greatest assets. Well, I'll bid you goodbye now. Shake your hand for luck.
I'd sooner shake hands with a ghoul.
Suit yourself. But let me hear that revolver speak in 5 minutes, Dono. No longer.
He stepped out of the door, and I bolted it, then moved over to the center of the room. I glanced at the gun in my hand and felt a slow wave of revulsion creep over my skin. The situation was ridiculous. I was king, head of the royal family. But what could I do? If I refused, I knew what lay ahead for me. But if I escaped... The minutes were slipping by, and there was only one way of leaving the room. But I could hear Krennic outside with 3 or 4 henchmen. But perhaps I had one chance, a slim one, but worth taking. I waited until my 5 minutes were almost up, then raised my gun and fired once at the ceiling. Then I heard them try the door. A moment later, I heard them leave to look for the palace guard. And when I opened the door, I saw the corridor was clear.
Hurry, you fools. Break the door down. I distinctly heard the shot, and I think the king has killed himself. Faster, faster. Everyone remain outside. I'll investigate myself. But he is. He is!
Getting out of a palace is a simple matter for a man who's lived there all his life and who knows every nook in the dark. But the palace was one thing. Getting out of my own country was another. My face and head, moustached and heavily shocked with long hair, adorned every postage stamp. I had been photographed 1,000 times and could be recognized by any one of my subjects. Innocently, they would create a scene on seeing me that would soon have me back in Krennic's hands. So I had to disguise myself. But first, there was the problem of money. I had none on my person when I left the palace. But fortunately, I did have a large star sapphire ring, and I decided to chance selling it at a pawnbroker's. I slipped on a pair of sunglasses, pulled my coat collar high and my hat very low, and crossed my fingers.
I'm
sorry, I don't speak your language. I'm a British tourist.
I speak English. It is our second language.
Oh, good.
What can I do for you?
I want to pawn a ring.
May I see it, please?
Yes, here. It's just a short-term loan I want. I'm not asking for the maximum.
I can give you 1,000 gestas.
1,000 gestas, that's about £200 in English money.
worth a great deal more.
I'm sorry. That is all I can offer.
I'll take it.
Fill out this slip, please. I bring them on.
Very well, but hurry, please. As I leaned over the counter to fill out the slip, my eyes were bothered by the sunglasses and I couldn't see very clearly. So, unthinkingly, I slipped them off and bent my head over the receipt he'd given me. A minute later, he returned the money in his hand. I raised my head, and he looked at me squarely.
Your Majesty...
What are you talking about?
The king? The king in my shop!
Give me that money!
It is Your Majesty!
Once out of the shop, I bought a pair of scissors and some shaving equipment. Then I stepped into a public washroom at the railway station, waited until it emptied, and went to work on my hair and moustache. 20 minutes later, I'd made a fair attempt at disguising myself. I could walk the streets now if I was careful, but that was a far cry from walking across the frontier. I'd heard about a small cafe, a coffee shop where black market goods were traded, and a man could get almost anything he needed at a price. I found the place, sat down over a cup of coffee, and waited.
Beckett, Bashner, Litton?
Sorry, I don't speak the language. I'm a tourist.
I asked if you wanted to change some money at a good rate. You have English pounds?
No, just Geshtars.
Oh.
But I am in the market for something.
Yes? What?
A passport.
Passport?
I lost mine, you see.
Then why not go to the British consulate for another?
I can't.
Oh, are they looking for you?
Yes.
Why?
What difference does it make? I need a passport. If you have none to sell, stop wasting my time.
Perhaps I can get you one, if you can pay for it.
How much do you want?
How much have you got?
600 Geshtars.
For a forged passport?
900, that's all I've got.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. For a passport, I can get...
What are you looking at?
I may be able to help you out at that.
Really?
I'll need the photographs.
I'll get them for you.
Good. Then meet me at this address here on the card. Upstairs, room number 12.
When?
In 1 hour.
All right. I'll be there.
By the way, what did you say your name was?
I didn't say. But it's Welbley. Claude Welbley.
Welbley? All right, Mr. Welbley. In 1 hour.
But something in his voice gave me pause, and I decided to approach this rendezvous with caution. The address was in a poorer section of town, a decrepit house that advertised furnished rooms. I arrived 20 minutes ahead of time. But instead of going upstairs, I hid behind the staircase. 15 minutes later, my cafe friend arrived with a companion.
He should be upstairs, General. Room number 12.
Are you sure it was the king you spoke to?
Oh, absolutely. He shaved his mustache and cut his hair very short. But I saw the royal crest on his tie glass.
You were wise to contact me directly.
I heard from certain sources that you have been looking for a high personage, General Cranick, and I knew it would pay me well to prove my loyalty to you.
It will also pay you well to keep your mouth shut. The room is number 12, you say?
Yes.
Wait here.
Cranick drew another gun and slowly mounted the steps. My informer watched him go, his back towards my hiding place. As I heard a door open on the second story, I stepped out quickly, caught the informer behind his ear with the empty revolver I still retained.
What's going on down there? Stop! Stop, you hear?
As I raced out the door, I heard Cranick screaming behind me. There was no time now to lose myself in the streets. I had to get out of range of Cranick's bullets in a hurry. I rushed into the first building I reached just as his last shot whistled through the hem of my trench coat. It was a large hotel, patronized by tourists.
and as I quickly mounted the stairs like a hunted animal, I wondered if Krennic had seen me enter. I had to find protection. And so when I thought I heard commotion behind me as I reached the third floor landing, I opened the first room door I came to and stepped inside.
Well?
I beg your pardon, miss.
You might have knocked before coming in. Well, at any rate, you're here at last, and that's something.
Is it?
What's the matter with you? You're panting like a racehorse. You are the guide the travel bureau sent, aren't you?
Yes, of course. I'm the guide, Miss...
Carpenter, Eloise Carpenter. All right, let's get started.
Started?
I want to see the city.
Oh, the city.
What on earth is wrong with you, anyway?
Nothing. I'd be glad to show you around, Miss Carpenter.
Are you British?
Why do you ask?
Your accent, I thought they'd send a native guide.
Oh, I know the city as well as any native does, Miss Carpenter.
What's your name?
Wilbley. But I'm usually referred to by my nickname, Danny.
Danny. That's more American than British.
You're American, aren't you?
100%.
I'm rather fond of Americans. I mean, they're so easygoing and friendly. The American ambassador taught me your game of gin rummy when
you played cards with the American ambassador.
Well, you see, I was his guide for today.
Oh.
Where do you want to go first?
The Royal Palace, of course.
The Royal Palace?
Yes, I'm dying to see what it looks like. Perhaps I'll even get a glimpse of the king.
I don't think so.
What?
I mean, the palace is closed. They don't allow visitors at this time of night.
Oh, I have a special pass issued by General Krennic. My father got it for me. He's president of Interocean Airlines. How far is the palace from here?
Oh, 5 miles. It's much too far to go.
Now, look here. My plane leaves at midnight, and I'm going to have a look at the king if it's the last thing I do. Have you ever seen the king?
Many times.
I've heard he's very handsome. Is that true?
Well, he's fairly attractive, I'd say, and quite susceptible to feminine charms.
Oh, gee, I'd give anything to meet him.
Perhaps before you leave, I can arrange that, too. It had suddenly occurred to me that with Krennic on the streets searching for me, I'd be fairly safe going through the palace in the role of a guide with this American girl. And if I could manage to get into my own private apartments, I could make out a certificate of diplomatic immunity for myself that would get me across the frontier. But in order to do it, I needed the royal seal, which was on my desk. So I decided to take the risk. Half an hour later, we were inside the palace. And as I guided her through the wide corridors that led to my rooms, I kept a sharp eye open for surprises. Follow me, Miss Carpenter.
You certainly know your way around here, Danny.
I've been here before.
Oh, wait.
What is it?
This painting on the wall. Who is he?
Well, that's the king.
Oh.
Oh, what?
He's not as good looking as I thought he'd be.
The artist didn't do him justice.
Oh. Is he married?
No, thank goodness.
What?
He's never met the right girl.
Oh, should he, isn't he?
Come along, Miss Carpenter.
What's the big hurry? I've got 2 hours before my plane leaves, and my luggage is at the airport.
It's getting late. Even though your special pass got us in here very easily, we'll be asked to leave any moment now. Come this way.
You have a key to that door?
It's part of the guy's equipment. Inside.
Why so cautious? You're walking as though you're afraid of being... Why are you going into that desk room?
I'm looking for something. I'll be busy for a minute or two. Make yourself at home.
Whose apartment is this?
The king's.
His private room?
Yes.
Look, I don't think we ought to be in here.
You've got my permission.
Your permission? What are you writing on that paper?
Will you please stop asking silly questions and sit down?
Well?
The seal. Where is that seal?
There's something fishy going on around here. I don't believe you're a guide at all.
You're quite right. I'm not. I happen to be the king. Dano the Third, Miss Carpenter.
The king?
I don't have time to explain, but you must listen and believe me. My life is in danger. I've got to get out of the country.
But
have a seat on the plane tonight. Where does it go?
To Paris.
Paris, good. You must get another ticket for me.
But suppose the plane is full?
Miss Carpenter, I'm depending on you. No matter what happens between now and the time the plane leaves, look for me at the airport.
But what about the customs?
They won't stop me, not with this document. I've made it out to Claude Wilbley, giving him complete customs immunity and signed and sealed by the king.
Oh.
It won't be questioned.
All over, I will shoot to kill.
Krennic.
Who are you?
Indano's bodyguard. This man is a hired assassin.
Assassin?
Then listen to him, Miss Carpenter.
I think you had better leave the palace, young lady. And say nothing about this matter to anyone on the outside. I know who you are, and I assure you that you will not receive notorious publicity in regard to this.
I don't think I understand.
This man is a traitor to his country, not the king's bodyguard, as he claims. If anything happens to me, you must say the king was murdered. Do you hear? Murdered by traitors and foreign enemies.
But who are you, really? I'm so confused.
I am the king, Miss Carpenter.
You can see you are dealing with a madman. You saw the king's portrait. Does this man look like that picture?
No. No, he doesn't.
Then I suggest you go and leave him to me.
Very well.
Miss Carpenter.
I'm lucky I'm still alive.
And so are you, Zano. But your luck is running out.
So it seems.
You were a fool to try to get away. Now you have made it easier for me.
Have I?
Your body will be identified as an enemy saboteur sent to murder the king.
And how will you explain the king's absence?
Not very simply. The assassin succeeded. We will proclaim a state of mourning and a royal funeral for an empty casket, of course. These things can be arranged.
Someday, Krennic, you'll find yourself on the wrong end of the gun. In front of a firing squad.
Meanwhile, it is you who faces the business end, Zano. Goodbye. Or, as we say in our native language, hasti preznik. Good riddance.
I stiffened with the shot, expecting the sting of steel through my heart. But it was Krennic who fell to the floor at my feet. I turned. And there behind me was Cherik, my friend and valet, with a smoking revolver in his hand.
Cherik!
Hurry, Your Majesty. You must leave the palace.
But what about you, Cherik?
Never mind about me. It's your safety that counts.
No, I can't leave now. They'll hang you.
Don't worry about me, sire. I shot him to protect my king. It was either his life or yours. They won't catch me. Quickly, go through the open terrace window where I came in. The gardens are clear. Hurry!
But I still had to get a place on board the plane for Paris. And when I reached the airport, they told me the plane was fully booked. I tried to talk my way into a seat, but there was no use. Just as I had freedom in my fingers, it was slipping away again.
But I've got to have a seat, I tell you. There must be an open booking.
You're right, Danny. The plane's full. I bought the last seat an hour ago.
Oh, Miss Carpenter.
And I bought it for you.
How can I repay you?
Very simply. Just send me an autographed picture so I can brag about really meeting a king.
That was 2 years ago. And since then, I've been enjoying the world at my leisure. Although I must admit that working for a living has its drawbacks. However, I have my compensations. And I see that my most fortunate compensation is approaching our table now.
Your Majesty?
What is it, Cherik?
It's your turn to be host at dinner tonight. What would you like me to prepare?
Use your own discretion, Cherik, but keep a steady eye on the royal purse.
I'll deliver the usual invitations, of course, to King Randolph, King Alex, and King Rupert.
Yes, and tell Rupert we won't take offense if he's a bit tardy. I understand he's driving his taxi on the second shift now. Meanwhile, I must attend to business, Cherik. And this American gentleman is anxious to visit the Prince's Palace. With your permission, sir, I lead the way. The Royal Palace, as you know, is occupied by the reigning monarch. At present, Prince...
In the animal world, there is the hunter and the hunted. Hound and fox, hawk and sparrow, chicken and worm. But who is to judge precisely which is the pursuer or the pursued as we enter the chase?
The Chase, on Tuned to Yesterday, an episode from the 19th of April, 1953 on NBC. The story was penned by radio writer Lawrence Klee, who also wrote for the ABC series The Clock, very similar to NBC's The Chase, and also contributed stories to the very famous and much-listened-to CBS program Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, and the detective show The Fat Man. This is an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for Escape with an episode called The Adversary, a May 6th, 1954 broadcast from CBS.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape.
Escape, transcribed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are groping your way through the belly of a sunken ship, a fortune and pearls secured to your belt. While above on the ship that tends you, working the pump that sends air to you, is an adversary whose plans include the taking of your pearls and your life.
Listen now as Escape brings you John Russell's story, The Adversary.
It was at dusk and on an ebb tide that the pearling schooner Fancy Free came smartly up into the wind and dropped anchor in the harbor of Thursday Island. And it was after dark when her master came ashore and paid off his Kanaka crew. He was a big man, this captain, with a crop of black hair, a smooth long jaw, and gray eyes. As he went swinging along the waterfront, the crowd parted right and left before him. Now, news of any arrival travels fast on Thursday Island, and with such a figure as this, the conversation at the Portuguese bar had been going on for some time.
One thing I know for certain, he's got the trimmest lugger in these parts.
And where's he from, Smike?
First time I ever laid eye on him or his boat was this evening.
If he was from these parts, Portuguese, Captain Smike would know him.
Well, wherever he's from, he'd be like the rest of you, up to no good.
Oh, you've no use for pearlers, have you, Portuguese?
You're all cut from the same cloth. Thieves, drunkards, brawlers, and worse.
Ah, you fat devil. You're better than the worst of us.
I know and can account for my shortcomings. It is not so with you, who make a living like so many sea gypsies.
What's he saying, Captain Smike?
Alf, drink your drink.
I only wanted to know.
The stranger, Smike. He's another pearler, perhaps.
Yes, he could be.
I'll find out more when he comes for his rum.
Pour me a drink, Portuguese. And one for little Alfie. A toast to Thursday Island.
Thursday Island.
Where the only honest men to grace its shores came by land.
You there, at the bar.
Cool. Look at the size of that one.
My name is Smike, if it's me you're talking to.
My name is Weatherby. John Weatherby. I'm master of the Fancy Free.
That's the lugger in the harbor, ain't it?
And so, Captain Weatherby,
I've come to spend some time with you.
Captain Weatherby, what is your pleasure?
Rum, but first I'll have my say.
That's your right.
A moment back you drank a toast to which I take exception.
That's so.
You said the only honest man on Thursday Island came by land.
I did.
Now then, I don't mind what you call yourselves to yourselves. As long as I'm in your midst, anyone that says I'm not honest and can't prove it, I'll knock the seven bells out of him.
Since you're a stranger here, Weatherby, I'll tell you something. I'm senior captain on Thursday Island, and I say what I wish when I wish. And it's like I said before. The only honest man on Thursday Island came...
Lummy, he never even got it said.
You, little fella, go give your friend a hand. He'll need help for a while yet.
My name is Alf, and I ain't finished my drink.
Go.
Yes, sir.
Now, I'll have that rum.
Right away, Captain Weatherby.
On Thursday Island, there was no prying into a neighbor's affairs unless one was prepared to push the inquiry with a knife. And so it was that nobody questioned where Weatherby came from, or his pearling license, or the motley crew he picked to replace the skilled Kanaka boys he'd let go. His new cook was Chinese, his head diver a Manila man, and his mate a giant North African who went by the name of Buttermilk. But questions or no, as the months passed, a legend was growing about Captain Weatherby.
Oh, he'd chase you right across the Pacific to pay your tuppence he might owe you. That's his sort.
You never had tuppence in your life, Alfie. 5 nights ago, he was in here, and he drank 5 hard cases under the table. And when they left, he squared the whole bill himself.
Honest Weatherby, they call him.
Honest Weatherby, he's up to something. They say nothing but good about him.
You're right as rain, Portygee. Last month he stayed in quarantine, voluntary-like, just because of that island steamer and the cholera scare.
Then paid his crew their monthly wages anyway.
His crew? A good master wouldn't allow a one of them to set foot on deck.
Well, they ain't been exactly trained by the Queen's Navy.
What I want to know is this. Why's he got the fastest lugger in these parts manned by that collection of trash?
You still hold that blow against Weatherby, Smike. But he's all right.
Harbor authorities, pilots, and other masters, and the whole lot. They all like
him. I don't. Listen, that will be the Brisbane steam.
It's trying to get her bloody passengers back aboard. She sails at midnight.
Australia. I wish I was going. I'd like to see Australia again.
Yes, they'd probably like to see you, too.
Oh, now, Captain.
Like as not, it's her pilot the Fanshawe's blowing for.
Pilot?
Ever since she put in here, Weatherby and that ship's pilot been trying to drink the island dry.
I wonder where he is now.
Down at the docks, like as not. Pouring his pilot friend aboard the steamer. Another rum, Portygee. And another for little Alfie.
And in truth, Weatherby was down at the docks. His coat turned up against the squalls that were blowing wet from the ocean. He was standing in the shadows by some packing crates, watching from a distance the yellow cargo flares that showed the loading of the Fernshawe was still in progress. Then, just as Captain Weatherby was turning away, another figure slipped from the shadow and moved to confront him.
Captain Weatherby?
Yes?
I'll take Harvers, if you please, Captain Weatherby.
What?
I said Harvers. Now, don't move, Captain. I've got you well covered, and I'm not afraid to shoot.
Deacon! After all these years, the Deacon. Bless me if I didn't think I'd done you in.
I should have died, but I didn't. No thanks to you.
And what are you doing on Thursday Island?
I dropped in from Samurai, meaning to catch the Brisbane steamer.
Huh?
I've been doing some diving up the way, but I'm only a fair diver, and my luck's been poor until tonight.
Until tonight? And why the change, little beetle?
Because I chanced to see you, my old friend. And I was strolling along the front, and I made inquiries, and I heard what they call you in these parts. Honest Weatherby.
Why, you wasp. You have it in mind to blow on me?
To tell what I know of you, and have you go to jail? Not a chance. That would do me no good.
What then?
I just want half of your new speculation. Your latest deviltry.
What makes you think I've got a plan, Deacon?
Oh, do you think I couldn't smell it out? I know your methods too well. Fine public character, no suspicion, alibi all complete. Yes, and I also know you sneaked your crew out of town tonight. Your lugger's ready to slip cable this minute. And most important, I happen to know what the Fernshawe's carrying aboard her this trip.
Oh, the devil you do.
The season sweep of pearls, £20,000 worth.
Suppose I was after those pearls. How would I get them?
That's for you to do, and me to profit by.
Oh, so you'll let me do the dirty, and then take Harvers,
that's
right?
Right, Captain Honest Weatherby.
Blast me if it isn't hard to know whether you're with me or against me, Deacon.
Thus saith the Lord. An adversary there shall be, and he shall bring down thy strength from thee.
All right then, Deacon. I'll put up with your blackmail and piracy. And I'll take you on as an adversary. And you'll be part of the enterprise.
Good. And now, Weatherby, tell me this. How are you to get the pearls that are aboard the steamer there?
I shall have to dive for them, Deacon.
Dive for them?
And like it or not, since you've declared yourself in, you'll be a party to it.
You mean you're going to sink her?
That's exactly what I mean, Deacon. Within 2 hours of sailing, the Fernshaw will be resting on the bottom of the passage.
Within half an hour, the little lugger Fancy Free was standing out to sea. The master, Captain Weatherby, and a small and shivering passenger sheltered in the lee of the deckhouse. The deacon had wanted in on the profit, but he had hardly counted on mass murder as a means to it. One man's death he might have countenanced, but to murder a steamer was something else.
Weatherby, you can't do it. You can't drown a whole ship's company.
Did you ever hear the Volga, the Kate, or the Mecca? Well, they all fell a trifle off the track. Their bottoms were ripped out on Tribulation Shoal. Now, the same thing might happen to the Fernshaw.
But how? There's a light on Tribulation Shoal.
So there is. It's a fourth-order fixed dioptric, unattended. Now, suppose that light were moved.
But like you say, it's fixed. Yeah. And besides, the keeper lives only a mile away on Horn Island. You couldn't move it.
Suppose a man were to land on the lee of Tribulation Shoal and with a canvas blanket the light to westward. Now, if that same man were to take a discarded lightship lantern that he might have aboard his lugger and after anchoring some half mile away show this light at his masthead, what then?
What? You're mad, Weatherby.
You begin to see the possibility for error.
You really are going to wreck her.
Well, I am, Deacon.
You wouldn't. You dared.
Captain.
What is it?
Big Sir Head. Can hear.
How far?
Close. Very close.
Deacon, get below. We're at Tribulation Shoal, and there's man's work to be done yet tonight.
Weatherby.
Get below. Buttermilk.
Captain.
How close now to the south?
200-300 yards.
Have the helm put over, Buttermilk, and drop a hook. We're going ashore to have a look at Tribulation Light.
Now, it is a fact that no one knows or is ever likely to know the actual explanation for the wreck of the Brisbane steamer, which left Thursday Island and came to grief some 2 hours later on Tribulation Shoals. But the records declare that she went clean off her course and a coral reef laid her open as neatly as a butcher's knife lays open a carcass. She sank within 5 minutes. The next morning, as the dawn spread an iridescence over those waters, Captain Weatherby anchored his lugger between the tips of the two sunken masts.
All right, Buttermilk, get my equipment ready.
I get diving suit.
Well, Deacon, you'll note for yourself there's not a trace of evidence. We've not been spied. The lantern we used is sunk. Canvas destroyed, and Tribulation Light as it was before.
You're evil, Weatherby. Pure evil.
Deacon, is there so much difference between a lot and a little? Come now, Deacon, cheer up. Here we are, and there are the pearls. 20,000 pounds worth of them, just oversized.
No, I don't want any part of them.
And within 3 hours, I'll be back out on the pearling banks about my business, never having heard of the wreck.
Captain, you strap diving shoes.
Next week, or any time I choose, I'll be walking the streets of Thursday near the news. And who will be as surprised as Captain Weatherby, that hard-working man. Honest Weatherby, with a fortune in his belt to dispose at leisure.
Already now. Good helmet, Captain.
Yes, Deacon. I've not a problem in the world. Except you.
Me? Why me?
You are evidence. This stinking crew doesn't matter. I've kept them too befuddled to know what's happening. But you, you could be Queen's evidence. I'm not forgetting you.
Now listen to me, Weatherby. I want no part of...
What kind of an adversary do you call yourself, Deacon? I'd hope for some support from you. Now come below, Deacon. Now is the time to change your luck. Come below once and for all.
No. No, I won't go down with you, not down there.
Well, you're a diver, aren't you, Deacon?
I can't, not in that ship, I can't.
Oh, blasted Deacon, I thought at least you'd be amusing. Eh, very well. When I come back, I'll knock your silly head in.
Captain, you want helmet?
One thing, Buttermilk.
Yes, Captain.
You see that fellow white man? Maybe he wants to go below. Good. You give him other soup.
Yes, Captain.
Maybe he touch pump or raise fuss. You knock 7 bells out of him. Otherwise, no order. You savvy?
I savvy, Captain.
Good. Now help me with the helmet.
Yes. Put on now. You okay now, Captain?
You murderer! You filthy murderer with a beak!
Captain, no here. Not in helmet. You white fella, move away. Captain, go waterside now. You fella pump plenty good. Captain need much air.
Listen, you, I've got to talk to you.
Captain, see you no good.
Look, I'll give you money. Anything, just cut those lines.
Captain, die we cut line. No bleed down there.
Yes, that's right, he'll die, but I'll pay you more than he will.
Line stop moving, Captain, on ship now.
What about it? You want money?
No.
What do you want, then? I give you anything you say, just cut those lines and leave him.
White fella no good.
But don't you understand? He'll kill me after he gets those pearls and comes up.
Captain say no order.
Huh? You've got to listen
to
me.
Go away.
Look, put me in the longboat. Turn me loose. I'll take my chance with the open sea rather than with him. I can't stay here.
You stay.
No, I won't. I won't just wait here like a fool for him to come up and kill me when he pleases. I'll go down below there with him first and fight it out.
Want out a dive suit? Go waterside.
I don't know. I don't know. I've got to think.
You nothing. Blackfella boy, pump good. Captain need plenty air down there.
And down below, everything went exceeding fine for Captain Weatherby. In a matter of 20 minutes or less, he had found the strongbox, broken it open with an iron bar, filled his canvas sack with pearls, and was making his way back towards the companionway through which he had entered the ship. The light was getting stronger as he came back. Then suddenly he stopped. A dim form was facing him. A man as tall as himself, clad in a diving rig. And Weatherby was smiling as he thought,
same type helmet as mine. Same shape. Only other like that is on Fancy Free. Well, by all that's holy. Oh, it's the Deacon. So you come down, Deacon, after all. So you're going to dispute the prize with me, eh? Claim your vengeance. All right. I was going to kill you one way or the other. One crack on your helmet with this bar, Deacon, and your eardrums are gone. You'll be just an unfortunate diver who drowned while working. But at least you've proved an adversary worth his salt. Now, I'm moving at you, Deacon. Good. You move too, eh? We're going to fight it, ah. Good. A little closer. That's it. Now I'll split your skull.
Oh, set out another bottle of rum, Portagee. I'm cold clean through to the marrow.
5 days out there at the wreck, and no thanks from anybody.
Not even from the man you brought back?
Him? He's crazy as a tick.
Calls himself a deacon, a man of the cloth. Look at him over there, sitting alone at the table, talking to himself. Scripture,
but
it is.
But what of Captain Weatherby? They said you found his lugger anchored over the wreck.
There was 2 people could have told us that story. One was a deacon, as he calls himself.
And the other a great hulk of a West African that he went down after Weatherby never come up. You need gear to go that deep.
The bleeding crew couldn't manage a word between the lot of them.
Hold out.
He hideth his wrong in his heart. Let him be snared in his own pit. In the net which he hid is his own foot taken. Lord, break thou the arm of the wicked and the evil man.
Oh, poor fool. He don't know what he's about.
Smite, tell me. What of Weatherby?
He found him down the wreck. The pearls all in a great sack tied to his diving belt. And he was drowned.
Drowned?
His suit had been cut to ribbons by shards of broken glass.
Yeah.
He was drowned for fair, right inside of his suit.
But the glass, my... What was the glass?
Oh, a broken mirror.
A mirror?
It served as a facing for the saloon door leading out of the companionway.
It's like he stopped to take a look at himself. Just that one last time.
Oh. Well, a toast to Captain Weatherby. Rest his soul. The only honest man who came by sea to Thursday Island.
Under the direction of Norman McDonald, Escape has brought you The Adversary by John Russell, specially transcribed for radio by Mr. McDonald.
Escape, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from May 6th, 1954, bringing the curtain down on this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. It's been a pleasure.